This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to a two-year low. There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Hey, Thomas, we're on a break next week, so no show next week and no show the week after. We're having 2 weeks off for the school holidays and then we'll be back, I'd say, refreshed, but I took the kids bowling to lunch and then to intensity today and I am a wreck. So that's day one of the school holidays down. 2 weeks, we'll see how we're trucking. But anyway, as always, a big show coming up. So let's get stuck straight into it. Startups are slowing down. Will people just go back to looking for a job instead of inventing one? On Comedian versus Economist, it's corporate America versus the US government as Bezos battles Biden. But first, Thomas, Reamped Energy is considering renaming itself to Deamped Energy as it tries to get rid of customers. What is going on there?
We ticked this one off a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember when, but we got an email from Phil, CV podcast something something. You know the details. Adam will fill you in later.
CVE at equitymates.com via the website equitymates.com/CVE. Nice job, Thomas. Slick as ever.
Yeah, so Phil forwarded us an email from Reamped Energy. He was a Reamped Energy customer and Reamped were telling all their customers that they could find better deals elsewhere and that they should seriously consider leaving.
This did seem a bit odd at the time, it's fair to say. This was certainly the first time I've ever heard of a business of any sort telling their customers, hey, you can probably score a better deal. Woolies have certainly never told me to maybe check out the red spot specials at Coles. It was a bit odd. And I don't think neither of us could come up with a reasonable explanation that made a lot of sense to this.
No, we took a couple of I think the best guess for us was that they knew prices were going up. They didn't have enough electricity. They weren't covered for electricity, which meant they maybe had to buy at inflated spot prices, which meant that they just needed to get rid of customers.
Yeah,
that was our sort of best guess. And then they just put that with like a bit of marketing spin around being the honest guys in the market. Turns out, though, might be a little bit more to the story. The AFR revealed last week that they had hedged positions. So them and Reamps is a New Zealand company, but then there is a crew that's listed on the ASX, which is listed.
Are you Googling this right now as we talk? I thought you usually come in with notes.
Well, the kids are away, so I had a bit of a big weekend on the weekend. A little dusty.
Had some mates come around, got some spreadsheets out. Did some sum brackets.
No, they're on the ASX. I knew that the acronym is LPE. I just couldn't remember what it stood for. It's Local Planning Energy. They're on the ASX anyway. But now it turns out that the Australian Energy Regulator is investigating them because they had hedge positions, which they then sold back to the market worth up to about $100 million, which is what the AFR is saying. So basically they had bought energy in the futures market, so they had locked that contract in back when energy was kind of cheap. And then energy prices exploded, and it's interesting actually looking at energy prices. I was trying to sort of clock this today. Like, it was sort of around $60 per megawatt hour. Now it's up around $490 I saw in Queensland, but it's sort of like it moves around. So it's like it's hard to know where to sort of like draw the average, like whether you look at the quarterly or the weekly numbers, you get different numbers. But energy prices have exploded. That's no secret. So what they found themselves in the situation is they had bought a lot of cheap energy in the futures market, which had now that energy had exploded in value.
Right.
And so rather than giving it to their customers at the contracted price, which was contracts that were set 12 months ago or something, which was relatively cheap, they could not give it to their customers and give it back to the market and make a lot of money, apparently.
This happened to me, the same thing the other day, actually. I filled up the car with petrol. It was like $1.20 a litre, and then petrol prices went like gangbusters to like $2. So there I am sitting on a full tank of petrol that I paid $1.20 a litre for. So I just jerry canned that up, sold it on Facebook Marketplace and told the kids to walk to school. I'm backing them in. I see what they're doing. But I guess they couldn't just tell their customers, look, we don't want to sell you, like we're not going to sell you the electricity, because they were contracted with the customers to sell them, right? So they instead, what did they do? They wrote them all the letter that they wrote people like Phil a letter saying, hey, maybe you could shop around for a better deal, one that doesn't involve us selling you electricity that we could make a lot more from if we sold it back into the market.
It was sort of odd because they weren't sort of saying what was specific to them. You know, energy prices are exploding. If a customer shop around, they're going to find another retailer who's got the same cost pressures on the wholesale side. Customers are facing rising prices no matter which retailer they go to. Even the gentailers, their prices are going up. So, you know, like AGL, like they generate and retail. There's two businesses bundled together. But even they're not protected. Like their retail's getting smashed as well.
If Phil shopped around, was he going to find a better price given that the market had already started going up? Like, yeah, I imagine the other retailers and the gentailers would be like, well, no, the writing's on the wall. We don't want to sell you the energy we've got.
Yeah, like, right. This is the thing in the AFR article, is that apparently they quoted some unnamed executives from the big retailers who are really annoyed about this because they end up with the customers after the Reamp left, and they went and joined Origin or AGL or whatever, and they're like, God damn it. More customers. Some cheap energy.
What kind of world are we living in? We've got businesses fighting over not having customers. I don't want them. You take them.
Like, it's hard to know what they did wrong exactly. Like, you look at Reamp's letter and, like, it's a little bit sneaky. They're saying, like, we just want to be straight up with you. You're going to get a better deal elsewhere. We recommend that you go. They weren't saying, the straight up version sounds like it was, We're sitting on contracts for some really sweet energy, and we just want to sell it back to the wholesale market. So we'd prefer that you left. That would be like the straight talking version. Sounds like.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall in the committee meeting that had to come up with the plausible reason why they didn't want customers anymore. Can you imagine that? Like the pricing committee would have gone to the marketing department and just been like, "Look, we've got a challenge here. We need you to get rid of our customers." They'd be like, "What? You know what we do, right? We've literally spent 4 years building this business, trying to attract people to come and join us, and now you want us to get rid of them."
What they're saying, and Damien Glanville, he gave some comment. He's a CEO of LPE. He gave some commentary to the AFR and saying, like, look, it was either that or go broke, basically. The quote was, "We were running around scrambling to raise money for the credit supports. I was remortgaging my houses, as was Justin." Houses, plural.
Houses. It was tough times for everybody. I didn't know where to park my cars. I had to remortgage my houses. Yeah. I sold three of my boats. I've only got four left.
Yeah, but it goes on. We sunk a shitload of cash into the business and we could see that it was going to evaporate overnight. Selling my hedges was what the business needed to do to get my sunken costs back.
Mm.
Which I think is right. Like, I think, you know, like my retail has collapsed as well. Like, it's gone out of business. And right. I've got to find a new retailer.
Because you didn't leave when you were told, Tom.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that you get your contract gets bounced to a new retailer unless you nominate another one. So right. Yeah. So if you want to choose, you sort of. But then you can switch once you get bounced if you don't like where you end up. It's a funny system.
Does the government ever step in here? Does the government have a role to kind of go? Like, hey, we noticed that your electricity provider has kicked you out of there. They don't want you as a customer, and we understand you've gone shopping and no one else wants you as a customer. Like, if everybody's like, look, nobody wants to sell me electricity, can the government step in?
Well, no. It's a market in quotation marks.
Right.
Yeah, there's no nationally owned electricity retailer. No, there's nothing they can really do. Yeah. Yeah, and so there's retailers sort of collapsing all over the place. And so in that sense, like, I got a bit of sympathy for LPE and Reamped because, you know, they were sitting on this, you know, lucrative cash, like, with the hedges, and that's what's going to get them. That's the almost it sounding like the only hope to get them through this period and survive and then come back into the market and keep going. I can get why they you know, probably had to do that.
Well, is it legal what they're doing? Can they? I guess so. They just advising people. I guess you probably get a better deal.
I don't know what law they'd be breaking there.
Mm.
Like, it's a bit, you know, doesn't sound like with Reamps, my reading of the email, they're not being fully transparent, but they're not being.
No, but nobody is these days. Like,
nah.
You know. Everyday low prices, my bum. All right, Thomas, 2022 has been a rough year for startups. What's going on now?
Yeah, so it does seem like the market has turned a bit in terms of, like, support for startups. So 2021 sort of venture capital fundraising was through the roof. I think we talked about this. We covered some data of this a little while ago.
Mm.
Yeah, probably like 6-9 months ago now. I lose track. It's like a huge amount of money, huge amount of venture capital money flowing into Australia. Yeah, like, that's what we even called the show, Why Are Aussie Startups a Magnet for Cash? Because the first quarter of 2022 was huge, but it's slowing very rapidly. It's down now, startup funding's down now 52%.
Right.
So Cut Through Venture is a organisation. I don't know what they do exactly. I think they do data on venture capital. Mm. Yeah, saying down 52% from a year earlier. Yeah, 44 deals completed in June, down from 63 this time last year.
What does this mean? Fewer startups starting up, or the ones that are the existing startups are what, having to cut costs or what?
So different funding rounds. So when a new company will go for different funding round and you get the early, I don't know what they're called. They've got different names like Series A, Series B.
Mm.
There's different stages that they raise capital. And so they're different. The data here just captures the total amount going into the different series. And one of the things they're saying is, like, it's moving towards later series investment, that the early stage investing, that's dried up the most.
Right.
And there's been a bit of a shift away from fintech, which was sort of when last time we talked about it, that was the big driver.
Vault Bank closed, didn't they?
That's right. Yeah.
It was like there was a bunch of these neobanks around for a while.
Mm.
And then I think all the neobanks got bought up, well, at least one each got bought up by the big banks, and then there was just a few neobanks left floating around going, could someone buy us too? And they were like, nah, we've got one already.
I've got one.
Like picking kids for the school sports team.
Yeah, the ones that got big funding in this quarter were education tech, apparently. Ah.
Right.
Yeah, so funding seems to be sort of drying up a little bit. There's also the Sydney Morning Herald and the AFR running articles on the number of startups shedding staff.
Right.
Yeah, so Sendal was one of the big ones. I don't know if you know Sendal, it's a shipping business. It was sort of taking on Australia Post but sort of focused on the business trade.
Right.
Post without the office is their tagline.
Right. Classic. That's clever.
Yeah, smart. Mm. Yeah, but they were a bit of a darling like 12 months ago. But, yeah, they've now made 12% of their workforce redundant.
Right.
And what the CEO described as a preemptive step. And he's saying that he's seeing what's going on in America and is getting a bit nervous.
Mm. Did they consider getting rid of some customers? Try and scale back demand. Keep the staff on.
So yeah, so they're cutting staff. Airtasker, another sort of famous name out there. They cut 5% of their staff. All the crypto ones.
I didn't think they had any staff. That was the point of Airtasker, wasn't it? People paid other people to do the work. Who's working on Airtasker? What do they do? You know, if they need someone at short notice, you know where they could go find someone. Oh, they can't go there anymore. They're scaling down.
Yeah. Right. When Vault closed down, that neobank, that was 140 people lost their job there.
What made me laugh is that there's a new startup called Early Work. And what Early Work does is they help people who've been laid off by startups that have closed.
Really?
So the solution to startups running out of venture capital and having to lay off staff is a new startup to help place people who've lost work due to failing startups. Oh, I don't know where this is going to end.
Every crisis is an opportunity.
That's right. Exactly right. Exactly. Given how low the unemployment rate is at the moment, is this the kind of thing that's going to show up in the jobs data, or is this...
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny the way they're reporting it. So Sendal's like shed 12% of their staff. That's 26 people. Yeah. Right, Airtasker shed 5%. That's 9 people. So right. they're not big numbers because they're not big companies. Which, I mean, that's interesting. Like, you think about Sendal and Airtasker, like big names. Like, they got big splash names. Everyone, like, I don't know. I feel like they're not household names, but they're pretty well known. But they're like tiny organizations. Like, Airtasker's 200 people.
That's the whole point of the organization, isn't it?
Well, like, I think it's tech. I think that's tech.
I mean, we're being it's tech. Yeah. So you got some developers and. I don't want to oversimplify it, but the whole point is that you're not running all this stuff. It'd be like Uber doesn't run a fleet of cars because the whole idea is that it works because you don't have to run a fleet of cars.
Yeah,
like, so it makes sense that they don't have huge staff numbers.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just a tech story then. So what does this tell us about where the economy is at? Anything is it, or is it just a kind of?
I think it points to liquidity, like. Mm. You know, there was a boom in 2021, like a massive amount of venture capital money flowing around into startups, into different things, into SPACs, those, you know, blank check companies.
I never understood SPACs.
Oh, it's
like SPAC filler all over it. SPACs, no idea.
Yeah, basically it's a blank check company where investors put all their money in and go like, we don't know what you're going to buy, but go out and buy something. And we just trust you're going to buy something good.
But who's running them? Like, I think SPACs have, like, SPAC, by the way, for anyone who hasn't heard the term before, I think special purpose acquisition company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, its sole, as you say, its sole objective is to, like, buy other companies. From what I read the other day, they're all failing as well, all the SPACs.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's a case of the liquidity tide going out. So you had all this money coming out of money printing out of the central banks. That's now turned. Interest rates are rising. And that liquidity starting to dry up. That's changing the game. Yeah, there just isn't the money that was around before. And so OIF Ventures partner Lawrence Schwartz was quoted saying that growth at all costs is no longer being rewarded by investors, and there's a shifting mindset towards businesses that have strong growth but that are also capital efficient with strong underlying metrics like gross profit, sensible customer acquisition costs, lifetime value, retention and engagement. So basically they're saying like that's the metrics of a good business. So money's now more interested in good businesses, whereas before they were just interested in growth. They didn't really care just about the underlying business.
Speckies.
Yes, yeah, speckies. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, which makes sense. So no more speckies, no more SPACs. But I did see that Spicks and Specs is making a comeback. So instead of Specs and Specs, we'll have Spicks and Specs. right. Why don't we, on that ridiculous note, why don't we pause? We'll grab a quick break from this week's sponsor and be back after the break. We're going to be looking at Bezos versus Biden. Stick around. More comedian versus economist right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. You can get in touch with us via social media, Facebook and Instagram at CVE Podcast, or of course, send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, or via the website, equitymates.com/CVE. Thomas, Jeff Bezos is fighting with Joe Biden. What's going on? A couple of heavy hitters.
Yeah, they're involved in a bit of an ongoing Twitter spat.
Oh, so and bored of Twitter, spats. Man. Like, why can't people, like, I don't know. I'd like to see a phone call between them, you know, or something old school, like kind of face-to-face meeting. They met up and, you know, they had a coffee and it all kicked off. And Biden and Bezos were just seen tumbling out of a cafe into the street. You know, like everything happens on all these big fights happen on Twitter these days.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, they're talking to different. They're not. I mean, that's a weird thing. You're pretending to talk to someone, but you're really talking to your base, and your supporters. Anyway, so President Biden came out and said that he demanded that petrol companies lowered their petrol prices at the pump. At a time of war and global peril. So bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product and do it now, he wrote. And at that point, Jeff Bezos, he chimed in and said that that kind of talk was, that inflation was far too important a problem for the White House to keep making statements like this. It's either straight ahead misdirection or a deep misunderstanding of basic market dynamics, he said.
He's familiar with Trump's tweets during his time in the White House, isn't he? Like, I think it's fair to say the standard of tweets coming out of the White House these days is significantly improved.
Maybe. So, but then anyway, so then the White House press secretary fired back, saying that the oil prices had fallen $15 a barrel in the past month, but the petrol prices at the pumps hadn't changed. And said that the market was failing the American consumer. And then she goes, but I guess it's not surprising that you think oil and gas companies using market power to reap record profits at the expense of the American people is the way our economy is supposed to work.
Zing.
Yeah. I mean, this is the White House press secretary, right? Just sinking the boot into the third richest person on the planet. Like, what the...
But he's not running Amazon anymore. He's just flying space rockets in outer space. So, yeah, maybe she's like, well, what's he going to do? He's not in charge. He's just a really rich man now.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think the politics has changed quite a lot because you now have this one of the horses that Trump rode to power was anti-corporate America and anti-big business, which... And he won over Rust Belt America, which had seen the offshoring of industry and jobs to other countries and then totally hollowed out the domestic economy and left people without jobs. Those constituents were, you know, previously working class and Democrat leaning. He won a lot of them over in 2016 by being anti-Wall Street, anti-big corporations. And that that theme has flowed through the Republican Party, and Ted Cruz now is sort of is flying the banner for that one, and he's being anti big corporations and anti big America, and saying that, you know, whereas the Republican Party was always the party of business, he's now saying that that Wall Street and the Democrats are in bed together, and that's the problem with the Democrats.
Right.
So there's now so the Republican Party's got a bit of an interesting split there happening at the moment, which doesn't seem to heal yet, and it'd be interesting to see how it resolves. But basically, billionaires, and now the Democrats are saying, like, okay, well, that opened up a weakness. We were too, we were seen to be too pro Wall Street.
Hang on, the Democrats. So Biden's a Democrat, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
and Trump was a Republican.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, just.
Yeah, and so the Democrats are like, well, we were seen to be too. We got hammered because we were seen to be in bed with big business. We need to be making sure that we're not. We're going to go shift that public perception. And sticking the boot into billionaires seems to be the way to do it.
Right.
Well, is one strategy, and which is why I think, you know, you got the press secretary just going to town on him, which is, you know, like you could kind of say, like, is that really appropriate for, like, you know, the press secretary of the leader of the free world to be making calls like that? But that's the sort of weird Twitterverse that we live in now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Biden's got any political friends, really. They'll take his money, but they, you know, there's no one going to stand up for him in this.
So is that what Bezos is saying? Is Bezos calling him on the sort of political bullshit, or is he – is Bezos – what's his motivation? Like, what's
– this spat started – so that's what happened last week, but this spat started a few weeks ago where President Biden tweeted – you want to bring down inflation, question mark? Let's make sure that the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share.
Right.
And so he's saying, like, you want to bring down inflation? Let's make sure wealthy corporations are paying tax. Okay. And then Bezos is like, what? That doesn't even make sense. Like, he's saying, like, he tweeted, the newly created disinformation board should review this tweet, or maybe they need to form a new non-sequitur board instead. Raising corporate taxes is fine to discuss. Taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection.
What do you reckon?
I mean, it's to an extent it's right. So Lawrence Summers, who was the former Treasury Secretary in America, I think under Clinton maybe, he said it sort of like, yeah, it's like it's mostly wrong what Bezos is saying. Like if the problem is excess demand and there's too much money in the economy, as a general rule, the government taking more out of the economy in tax slows the economy down. And so if you've got inflation because there's too much demand and too much money in the system, raising taxes and taking money out of the system is a way to cool inflation. And that kind of works.
Right.
But it's not direct. You don't typically talk about raising taxes as a way of fighting inflation. It depends on where inflation is, right? So, like, if you...
You could do it, though, like, because we talked last week about somebody wrote us in saying, could we raise the GST as a way of fighting inflation, like, rather than raising interest rates? Could we raise the GST? Everyone have to pay a bit more money. That would reduce their spending and yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, I don't know. Is that the argument here that they're saying, or is that what Biden's saying? Like, if they paid more tax, then that would somehow control inflation because they're not spending as much?
Yeah, there'd be less money in the system. Yeah, if the government took it out and then just sat on it and then didn't put it back into the system, that lowers the amount of money in the system, and that theoretically lowers demand, which pulls down demand pull inflation, if that's what you're fighting. But I think Bezos's point is like, well, we're talking about inflation. We're really talking about cost push inflation. It's all about supply bottlenecks. It's all about disruptions with COVID and those sort of things. And if you're talking about like too much demand money in the system, well, you just printed like a gazillion dollars and just let it flow out. Like, don't be blaming corporations for that. Like,
I do feel like that's starting to bite people in the ass a bit now, isn't it? The whole money printing thing. It's starting to not look like such a terrific idea because there's nowhere to put money. We've disrupted the equilibrium somehow of the markets, and there's a lot going on. I know there's a war and COVID and everything else, but I feel like a lot of this is going to start getting traced back to that crazy money printing that went on.
I think it is, but I think the thing to remember is the scale. Like, it's sort of like saying having a coffee is fine. Mainlining coffee straight into your veins is not a great idea. Like it was a bit like that. Like some money printing in a measured dose, slowly scaled up, carefully watching where you're like where the slack is in your economy and where things are too tight, and then managing around that, which is more closer to the MMT position.
Mm.
Like the MMT position was never just print money like a madman and just gush it into the economy, which is kind of what we ended up doing because we got away with it in 2008. So that, you know, US went into QE after the global financial crisis and had some money printing and it sort of worked out all right. We didn't get any inflation. We the Fed undershot the inflation target for most of the 2010s.
Mm.
So everyone was like, oh, we kind of got away with that. And then
green light, baby.
Like I think the scale of money printing, I think in hindsight, is definitely a mistake. Whether money printing as a concept was a mistake, and I think we probably overclocked how the impact that COVID was going to have on demand. I don't think it was quite as bad as we anticipated it being. And it was, you know, it was
really very, it's pretty bad. Like,
yeah,
supply chain disruption all over the world, isn't there?
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
Yeah, but
I don't know what your scale is that you're working on for how bad supply chain disruption is. But
yeah,
where I'm sitting.
Yeah, but no, the problem is there's too much demand now. Like Australia, we talk about like JobKeeper overclock things. There were companies that didn't need the support that got a lot of support. There were individuals who got a lot of support that didn't really need the support. There were people who definitely needed it and they got it, and that's great. You definitely in the Australian context, I think you'd say we overclocked it and ended up with too much demand and too much money in the system. And that's where a lot of that inflation's coming from.
When, just out of curiosity, do you know when Biden was sending these tweets? Was it late at night?
No, I couldn't tell you.
Because I did read something the other day that people are starting to question that maybe Biden's a bit old,
and that
his political staffers and aides are like, look, he can't really come out at night time anymore. He just needs to get to bed nice and early. But then on the contrary, some other people are like, nah, he's a super ager. That's a thing. There's a super ager. A super ager is someone like in their 80s, but that they kind of have the cognitive abilities of someone like in their 40s or something. So,
okay.
Yeah. I'm a super ager. I'm in my 40s, but I have the cognitive ability of a 5-year-old. Right, finally on the show today, we got an email from Nick. Sent us an email, cve@equitymates.com, with a little bit of a correction from last week. And I can't help but want to blame you, Thomas, despite this, I think, being my fault. I think last week we were talking about the 60-40 rule and 60-40 rule being 60% equities and 40% bonds making up a portfolio that was pretty resilient. We're talking about bonds and how bond prices are structured. And I think I might have said that, so when interest rates go up, bonds go up. But Nick sent us an email kind of correcting it. And I'm going to take Nick's word, but I'd like you to explain what's going on because I've still got no idea.
No, Nick's right. He's right. I mean, it's why this is such an interesting phase in the market and why we're sort of out of sync, or why the 60-40 rule stopped working.
Mm.
And sort of the idea with the 60-40 rule is that when your equities are falling, then your bonds are rising and vice versa, and you kind of balance it out.
Mm.
And so typically in a normal cycle, when interest rates are rising, it's because the economy is running really hot. And when the economy is running really hot, corporate profits are up and equities are booming.
Mm.
And you're sort of like having to raise rates to sort of cool things down. But when interest rates go up, then bonds fall. When the economy's tanking and company profits are falling and share prices are going down, then you start cutting interest rates and that pushes up bonds. And so you have falling equities in that scenario, but rising bonds.
Right.
And that's typically how it works. But what we've got, why it's sort of weird now, is because equity valuations exploded on the back of cheap money and interest rates and money printing.
Mm.
And now that that's being unwound, so you've got interest rates rising, that sort of speculative heat is coming out of the market and the market is correcting. So you've got interest rates rising at the same time, which is then causing equities to fall. And because so then interest rates are rising, which is pushing down bond prices, and equities are falling because liquidity is coming out of the system. And so that's right. sort of like the unusual situation you've got. And it's why the 60-40 rule doesn't work in a market like this. And this is something we're trying to sort of get to. Yeah, it's like it's sort of an artificial market that's been created by super cheap money. That's what's broken, the 60-40 rule. But yeah, so Nick's right. Thanks for that correction, Nick. That's good.
Yeah, thanks very much, Nick. Look, if you want to send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, you can get in touch with us there. That's it for us this week. We have 2 weeks off. We'll be away for a couple of weeks. Hopefully our absence will make your heart grow fonder. In the meantime, hope you will. Hope you're enjoying school holidays with your kids if you got them. Otherwise, we will come back refreshed, raring to go in a couple of weeks, and we look forward to your company then. It's bye for now.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the EquityMates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.